Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. On this 4th of July weekend, we're joined by Christy Seifert from the Farm Credit Council and Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company. They'll discuss the farm economy and what farm country should watch as President Trump's trade negotiation deadlines loom. Sentiment in farm country has fluctuated in recent years with talk of trade wars, weakened commodity prices, as well as rising input and regulatory costs that are squeezing producers. We asked Christy Seifert, the president and CEO of the Farm Credit Council, about the sentiment she's hearing in farm country right now.
Now, what we're seeing at the national level is what you're seeing out of USDA and other reports. And as you mentioned, it's a tough time for many in farm country. If you are a row crop producer, if you're a specialty crop producer in some cases, you are feeling the pinch. It's probably a pretty tough time for you from a crop price perspective, but also the crop input cost perspective. If you're a livestock producer, particularly a cattle producer, you're probably very happy to have cattle right now, but you probably have some animal health concerns. I have spent a lot of time as a new CEO here at the Farm Credit Council, traveling the country, talking to a lot of folks all across the country. And, you know, we're seeing that, we're feeling that very difficult time for many. And of course, in some regions and some commodities, the pinch is even tighter. And so what I have been very pleased to hear from my travels and communications with our associations and others throughout Farm Credit is we are working very closely with our customer owners. If they need to restructure or revisit how their loans currently look, we are doing that. We are making sure that we are working with folks to help them understand their options, to help them meet their credit needs. And in some cases, that might mean tapping into the FSA guaranteed loan program to help our lenders help them.
And I'm curious, from a regional perspective, I mean, what are you seeing in different areas of the country? You began to discuss, you know, the difference we're seeing in the economics for row crop producers and livestock producers right now.
I just spent some time with folks down in the Deep South over the past few days. And boy, if you're in cotton and rice country, you are really, really hurting. And you want to see some relief. You want to see an improved farm safety net. It's not confined, though, to just those two crops. There are a number of others, depending on the portfolio mix, right? If a farmer has other crops but no livestock to provide some of that boost or diversification in their own income stream, they are really looking for some improved safety net features in the reconciliation bill. We are also hearing, you know, regionally as well. I've heard from folks in California who have had concerns about where the trade challenges might take us, what type of market impacts those may ultimately have. And so I think folks across farm country are feeling the pinch in different ways and are also just cautiously optimistic we will all get to a better place when ag policies are improved, when ag policies and trade policies perhaps make a turn for the better. But we also recognize that there are some out there who are hurting, who are really, really hurting, and may need to just be reminded that we have access to mental health resources that we are happy to provide through the Farm Credit Council.
That's wonderful to have those resources. And when we talk about this uncertainty, Christy, I look at the Purdue Ag Economy Barometer that came out earlier this week, and a lot of uncertainty across farm country largely pointed at the uncertainty around tariffs. And so, you know, I'm curious, crops are in the ground now. How do you see that trade uncertainty affecting producers now and decision-making as they look ahead into the future?
You know, I think that farmers and lenders both like to have clarity and certainty. But I think it's also very important to recognize, you know, farmers are the ultimate optimist. They put a seed in the ground and they hope that that seed is going to make it through the end of the year and be a success in the end. And so I think they also have optimism that our trade policy will land in a better place than it has been in recent years. I think that trade has an incredible impact on market prices and the ability for farmers to move crops globally. And I think that will be very helpful when there is clarity.
We'll be back with more from Christy Seifer right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on. And Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Budget reconciliation includes a boost to reference prices and some farm bill provisions. Christy, how do you see these elements affecting the farm economy?
The current farm bill has been extended twice. It is time to have improvements made to the farm bill. And I think this was the creative thinking of the chairs of the House and Senate Ag Committees to get something through that is sorely needed. And so those improvements to Title I, the reference price boosts, the improvements in crop insurance, the improvements in the resource levels for trade promotion programs, all of those make a really big difference, I think, for farm country. I also think those improvements combined with tax improvements, tax extensions, that clarity in tax policy post-2025, that is going to really be helpful too for farmers moving forward.
And some farm bill elements like reference prices are included in reconciliation, but not everything that you and Farm Country was asking for that could have been in a complete farm bill. One of the elements on hold is increasing the borrowing limit for ownership and operating loans. I mean, what's the importance of getting this enacted? You mentioned some of the FSA loans, some of those things that aren't in reconciliation, but are still important to Farm Country.
We have several pieces that we would like to see included in a Farm Bill 2.0. And one of those is that modernization of FSA loan limits, the direct and guaranteed loans in particular. We have lenders who tap into those FSA guaranteed loans for a variety of reasons, primarily helping farmers restructure. That's happening a good bit right now to just help ease their financial situation, ensure continued access to credit. And, I think those limits need to reflect reality. They're not doing that now. And I think it'll be extremely helpful if that legislation is enacted. And so we're going to continue to make a push there. We also think it's really important to include legislation, bipartisan legislation, that clarifies our associations, our lenders' ability to finance critical facilities in rural America. By that, I mean rural hospitals, nursing clinics. In addition to that, we really like the Farm Credit Administration being our regulator because they understand agriculture. We have supported legislation that reaffirms FCA as our regulator, and we'll continue to support and hopefully see that that language included in a future farm bill. And then finally, I'll just mention Farm Credit finances farms, ranches, other ag operations, rural infrastructure, and then There's a great desire by some in fishing and aquaculture who wish to have similar access to farm credit resources and expertise. And so we are also supportive of a fishing bill to allow access to credit for those who are interested in the fishing and aquaculture industries.
And Christy, after our conversation, there's no shortages of challenges and uncertainty in farm country right now, but ultimately when you feel better, you farm better. Can you tell us a little bit about that initiative?
Absolutely. You know, it is just heartbreaking to think that the suicide rate for farmers is multiple times that of the general public. It is heartbreaking that anyone takes that step, but we have recognized there is a challenge in farm country, and we have partnered with others who have expertise in this area to make sure that we are providing a resource to farmers, ranchers, those who need it, to have this ability to have a chat, have a private anonymous network of folks who can give them encouragement, who can talk them through ways to just feel supported. So we have a thanks to the farm credit resources and partnerships that we have, we've been able to provide access to farmers through these different resources.
We'll be right back to continue our discussion with Dan Bossy from Ag Resource Company. But first, Andrew Hunneke has more on the current farm sector debt to asset ratio in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
According to USDA, farmers will owe less to creditors this year to cover debt obligations as the farm sector debt to asset ratio is expected to improve slightly. This ratio measures the amount of assets farmers owe to creditors to cover debt obligations. Higher ratios mean more assets are financed by debt and could lead to more risk for farmers. Those ratios are less damaging for young farmers who have a longer time to repay the debt and earn more money. This chart shows farm sector debt-to-asset ratio from 1970 to the projected totals this year. The debt-to-asset ratio is expected to drop to its lowest level this decade, going from just over 12.9% in 2023 to just over 12.8% this year. In the 1980s, the debt-to-asset ratio skyrocketed to more than 20% as interest rates grew and farm commodity demand dropped, leading to many farmers being unable to pay off their debts. This contrasted with the 1970s when farm income grew faster than expenses due to high demand for farm commodities and high inflation. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. President Trump enacted steep reciprocal tariffs in April, but shortly after announced a 90-day pause and baseline 10% tariff on most countries. However, July 9th marks the end of that period, and there's still a lot of uncertainty. Dan Bossy is the president of Ag Resource Company. We asked him what farm country should be watching for as this date draws near.
Well, you know, I think agriculture is a little disappointed that we're not seeing more deals completed by the time we reach July 9th. We've got the UK under our hat, more or less. We're waiting for news on India, which is hopefully coming in days, and then we'll see how everybody else sorts out. I think the EU is also going to be maybe coming along to some degree, though I think we need to have more specificity, if you will, on what the EU will be buying in terms of agriculture and those kind of aspects. But again, we're going to see higher tariffs going on. I'm sure we'll have tariff anxiety. anxiety again coming forward. So it's something that we need to brace ourselves for. But I'm hopeful at the end of this, we'll see some additionality in terms of U.S. ag trade. But for me, as an ag economist, the big one out there is still the United States and China. And I'm a little concerned that China may be sorted to the back of the pack as we try to, position ourselves with others ahead of their negotiation.
And the U.S. reached a preliminary agreement with China, but the trade deficit was, you know, not addressed in that. China's a major, major customer of U.S. soybeans. What's important to watch in that negotiation specifically?
So I, as an economist, are very concerned regarding China due to the timing of everything. We need to have the Chinese get a deal done by, let's say, the middle of August. Traditionally, China is a significant buyer of U.S. soybeans starting in August and then continuing all the way through the month of November. So I need China to get something done here. I need tariffs to be diminished or something to happen. That doesn't say Chinese doesn't buy U.S. soybeans. I think they will. But I'm concerned by the Chinese buying record amounts of Brazilian soybeans and then buying those soybeans all the way out until October. So they are encumbering on our export slot, and that is not a good thing for the U.S. farmers.
And you mentioned the United Kingdom as well. What are your biggest takeaways from that agreement? And do you think that agreement maybe foreshadows some of the future agreements the administration could make?
Well, I think the first thing it tells us, and I think everyone in agriculture and industry in general have decided this, that a 10% tariff is kind of the baseline these days. So that's where we need to start. The other thing I think the UK deal tells me that the details take longer than we had expected, which if we look back in prior negotiations, whether it be with the United States or China or others, that has always been the case. So the devil's in the details, getting things codified. And I still think that's where we are with the UK. That being said, I do think it's positive that we're getting some barriers broken down, non-tariff barriers. For agriculture, they are the highest of any industry, and we need to attack those with some vigor. So I'm encouraged by all of this, but I want to tell agriculture it's going to take a little bit of time before we get to that rainbow in terms of enhanced and additionality in demand.
Trump committed to continuing negotiations with Canada after they dropped the digital services tax. Products covered by the USMCA have been exempt since negotiations began. What's at stake in that deal-making with Canada specifically?
Well, in specifics, I would say that, you know, we're looking again at some of the imports and exports, both that are needed in the United States. We've just done an RVO and maybe a 45Z type of deal within. This is for vegetable oils, and we need the Canadian canola if we're going not to have a shortage of soybean oil, at least in reaching our biofuel mandates. So I think that's important. Other than that, it's livestock related. It may be a little bit of oat. The United States is the largest oat importer. All it's coming from Canada. So if you're in the oat industry, very important. And then, of course, spring and protein wheat coming in. But, you know, in the background of all of this, the relationship between the United States and Mexico are very key, and the United States and Canada also fall into that same bucket. So I'm worried by our North American trading positioning, but I do believe we'll get something positive going forward because it's too important for both countries looking down the road.
We'll be back with more from Dan Bossi right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farming presents the 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast. In each episode, a successful farming editor has a quick conversation with a farmer, chock full of stories and advice from their area of agriculture. They're interesting, educational, and perfect for your busy schedule. Search for 15 Minutes with a Farmer wherever you download your podcasts.
Welcome back. There's a lot of discussion about tariff agreements right now as President Trump's July 9th deadline looms. Dan, is farm country seeing the effects of those tariffs yet, or is it mostly just speculation and prediction right now?
At the moment, I would tell you that I think it's a lot of speculation. There's too much uncertainty. As an economist, we're trying to get details. We love details and dialing down into what are the opportunities going forward. Today, there is that uncertainty, and I just can't get some solidarity around what U.S. exports will look like. So a little bit shooting in the dark in terms of looking at 25, 26 corn, soybean, and wheat exports. But I believe we'll get there maybe by the end of the year where I, as an economist, will feel more comfortable. But today, just having the UK in our back pocket is not enough for me to feel comfortable in making some forecasts for the farm economy or for U.S. ag trade going forward.
Producers, you know, listen to markets multiple times a day. Sometimes that's a reflection of their certainty. I mean, what are we seeing there with amid all this uncertainty?
Well, I was surprised when I saw the Purdue, of course, ag barometer, which still was relatively high, nonetheless down, if you will, at a four-month low, but still sitting at its best levels looking back at 2022 when corn prices were at $7 and soybeans were at $14. So that's saying something. They're still giving the administration time to get this worked out. But going forward, you know, I also believe that the U.S. farm economy needs to see some certainty. The livestock side of things is very optimistic. Protein demand looks very strong. But as we reach some roadblocks in terms of China and soybeans and some other things, we need to really kick that the grain exports up, because this season ahead we'll have competition from a record Brazilian crop. So again, the farmers giving the administration the time to get it right, though the administration may have to cut a check to them sometime later this year just to solidify farm income.
And you mentioned that Purdue Ag Economy Barometer is down slightly this month, mostly due to uncertainty about trade that farmers are saying. You know, are they right to be concerned about that right now, do you think?
I think they are right to be about it. We are all concerned about it. We just don't know where this is all going to sort out, and in particular, the United States and China. So if indeed we're kind of pressuring the Chinese by other trade deals that they, of course, step down in their exports globally and maybe start to boost domestic consumption, that's a risk for the U.S. farmer. I do believe, you know, the administration has been hinting strongly that maybe there'll be some financial assistance, if you will, for agriculture, but it probably doesn't come until after the new fiscal year of September 30th, and then we'll have to look at budgetary issues thereafter. But, you know, there's kind of a joke going around agriculture right now. Maybe the best way to double your money in agriculture is to get two mailboxes. We'll see if that really holds true going forward.
I haven't heard that one yet, but that's a good one, Dan. I'm curious as well, you know, the value of the dollar is down this year. How is that affecting ag exports?
Well, it has been supportive of ag exports to some degree, but we're interested in looking at the relationship of the dollar relative to commodity valuations. And we've noticed in the last really 18 months that relationship is starting to break. And I believe that's a lot due to what we call the BRIC countries and maybe the Belt and Road Initiative from China. So when I think about the weakening dollar, it should be a help to U.S. ag trade, and in particular should help step down on profitability in a country like, let's say, Brazil, where the real has been a constant weakening force and giving their producers down there the appetite to continue to expand. And the same with the Russian ruble, our two big competitors in agriculture. So I'm hoping that the dollar keeps weakening. Some of this weakness is because we just don't know where the opportunity is in terms of trade and what investors will be looking at longer term.
I'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at the water cuts dispute between Colorado River Basin states in this week's Map It Out.
States in the upper and lower Colorado River Basin are trying to figure out how water cuts should be split up after current agreements expire next year. This map shows the states that make up the upper and lower basin of the Colorado River. The issue stems from a more than 100-year-old agreement called the Colorado River Compact. Currently, the upper basin states must send over 8 million acre-feet of water downstream every year. But those states want that amount to change since they are not using all the water they're entitled to use under the contract. Last year, lower basin states suggested cuts of 1.5 million acre-feet yearly from their reserves if the overall amount of water in the basin dropped below 58%. But that plan was rejected. Upper basin states want lower basin states to cut 1.5 million acre-feet yearly when the system's two primary lakes, Lake Powell and Lake Mead, drop below 75% of their combined capacity. That number would increase if both lakes are less than 20% full. There's also a hybrid proposal where lower basin states would cut 2.1 million acre-feet, while upper basin states would provide up to 200,000 acre-feet based on hydrological conditions. Lower basin states are not in favor of this proposal. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Check out our full lineup of Successful Farming podcasts. The Successful Farming podcast goes in-depth into the topics that affect farmers and ranchers. The 15 Minutes with a Farmer podcast offers a quick conversation between an editor and a farmer. The SF Shorts podcast offers bite-sized interviews about agricultural topics. And the SF Daily podcast covers commodity markets, weather, and the big things happening in agriculture each morning. Search for Successful Farming wherever you download your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Next week, both the House and Senate will be in session. The World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report will be released Friday. Tune in next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments on all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.